Although one doesn't get the sense that there is a great deal of unhappiness behind the closed doors of Madison, I know the truth. On Fox Avenue, for instance, there's a man who wants to be a woman. On Kai's, there is a young computer programmer whose equally young wife is sleeping with a 68-year-old butcher. On Gregory Street, a financial analyst for the credit unions of North America, a man who urinates off his back deck each and every night as an assertion of some buried wildness and freedom, contemplates suicide every Sunday evening as he prepares his clothes for the work week. This man said to me, "The logistics of living wear me out, paying bills, dropping off the dry cleaning, making sure there is butter in the house. I can't seem to ever have butter or eggs in the house when I need them. I can't take it. It's too much."
Dean Bacopoulos is one of America's most gifted young writers. He teaches at Grinnell College in Iowa, and he recently published a novel called My American Unhappiness. Critics praised it as one of the funniest novels published in 2011, but it is also proving to be remarkably prescient. Before the Occupy movement drew the world's attention to widespread popular discontent, My American Unhappiness delved into America's exasperation with runaway consumerism, big institutions, and unsustainable living. Bacopoulos tells Anne Strainchamps the recession broke over his own head just after he finished the book.
I was running a small nonprofit art center in a rural town in Wisconsin, and very quickly it became clear they didn't have enough money to keep me on as artistic director. And rather than lay off the staff, I resigned. And then about 2 months later, my publisher put a halt on all new books coming out and sort of was front page New York Times, Wall Street Journal, bad news, and was my publisher. And that bad news came the day I turned in a version of this book.
was it still called My American Unhappiness?
It was. The title, I
you
guess,
must have
was
felt
prophetic.
Very prescient.
Well, I did have this feeling the whole time I was writing the book that we were approaching the precipice of something that was dangerous, that we were about to go over the edge in some way as a nation, because everything felt so unsustainable to me and so false.
Well, at the center of the novel is this idea that even during all those years of optimism and financial booms, Americans were secretly unhappy. Do you really think so?
I think that if you ask the question the way Zeke, the narrator of the book, asked the question, if you blindside somebody with the question, "Why are you so unhappy?" they almost always have something from that day, that week, that year that's been keeping them up at night, that upset them or depressed them. You know, American unhappiness is the kind of unhappiness that comes with abundance, I think, with so many choices and so much at your disposal that you almost become paralyzed whenever it comes time to make a decision. And so that leads, I think, in America to this particular sort of overwhelmed feeling. So I think American unhappiness is unique because it does come from the very things we thought would make us happy.
Well, tell me about Zeke, your narrator. He's the director of a Midwestern Humanities Council.
Well, it's called the Great Midwestern Humanities Initiative, and it's a nonprofit government and private partnership, and he's taken on this project he calls the Inventory of American Unhappiness. And the scholarship is completely shoddy. He just goes up to people at random or through his website and asks them, "Why are you so unhappy?" And he's always delighted to find that people often have a ready response, a quick reason, that something they've been chewing on, and it's almost as if they've been waiting to be asked.
One of the great pleasures of reading the book is that Zeke, or you, include some of the answers that people have given Zeke, and he becomes obsessed with reading, stays up late into the night reading these answers. Can you read a few?
Sure. Here's one from Abigail H., 41-year-old medical software trainer, Verona, Wisconsin. "I've been unhappy since I was about 9. One day, this gray, damp January day, I remember waking up and getting upset because I had to go to fourth grade that day. And then, in one of those bizarre flash-forward moments you sometimes get as a kid, I saw the older version of myself, me, now, and I thought, there I am, getting up for work, going somewhere I don't want to go. And now, the other morning, I was dropping off my daughter Zoe, she's 4, at preschool, and I was like, oh, look at this, here we go again. Her too. God."
You actually put some of these interviews up on YouTube as well, which I was trying to think, what should we call this, reality fiction? I couldn't actually tell whether these were real people and you walked up to them on the street with a camera crew and said, "Why are you so unhappy?"
Why am I so unhappy? I'm 26. That means I have 50, 60 years left on a planet, running out of oil, getting hotter. I mean, I hear that, why are you so unhappy? And I just think, why shouldn't I be?
Yeah, Zeke Pappas has his own channel on YouTube now, and we have a lot of these monologues from the book have made their way into this sort of life outside the book that's still fictive but feels very much documentary style.
You know, something that just torments the hell out of me is growth. For example, they just built a brand new Cracker Barrel out by the highway. You know, do we really need another frickin' Cracker Barrel? You know, everything they build is an extra, and they spend so much money trying to make you think that you need it.
Do you think in some ways Americans also enjoy their unhappiness or their discontent? Because I was struck reading the book, you know, how quickly people respond when Zeke says, all he says is, why are you so unhappy? They're remarkably ready to lay out exactly why they're unhappy, as though it's something they've been carrying around and nurturing.
Yeah, it's true. I think that there is a culture of complaint that comes with education in a way. The more you think about things, the more you read, the more you worry about issues that are out of your control, the unhappier you get. And I think that it's probably a badge of honor in the fact that you're an engaged citizen if you're somewhat unhappy.
Well, you also suggest in the book that Americans actually prefer their presidents to be a little tortured, too.
I think so. I thought that, you know, one of the scary things about George W. Bush to me personally was just that he never seemed to be really exhausted or in a dark place. He always seemed sort of fairly peppy and raring to go, sometimes a little deer in headlights look, but ultimately he seemed pretty okay, you know, doing all right, can't complain. What I like about Obama, especially lately, is, you know, he looks pretty bad. He looks as if he stays up late at night worrying, and I think I want my president to do that. You should lose sleep as president. If you're going to take the job as president, you're giving up your 8 hours a night. You're down to four or five with a few naps if you're lucky.
Well, there's another moment in the novel I wanted to ask you about, which is when finally the full force of the financial crisis, the economic crisis, breaks. And there's a moment when Zeke, I think he finds it that it's come almost as a relief.
Yeah. There's a kind of desperation that comes with a recession that's very scary, but it's also a little bit thrilling.
What do you mean?
Well, to be desperate for the first time in your adult life, all the things you thought were sacred, the place you lived, oh, we'll never leave this town, or we'll never leave this house, it's a great house, or we would never sell that car, or this or that, all that stuff you believe about yourself goes out the window, and you're suddenly forced to reinvent yourself. And you realize that some of the things that you'd had and some of the persona you constructed was false, and you won't miss them.
I guess I found myself thinking a little bit about a book by Parker Palmer. He's a Quaker writer.
Mm-hmm.
He's written about depression that sometimes, not always, but sometimes psychological depression can be life's way of pushing us back down to earth, grounding us. And I was wondering if you would extrapolate from that and talk about the American psyche as having been, in a way, pushed back down to earth by the economic depression.
Yeah, I think that's a great analogy. And the depression is economic in this country, but it is also emotional, because how we perceived ourselves as a strong, invincible nation with endless wealth and endless ingenuity is starting to wear off. We don't really know how to end this recession. We don't know how to bring the jobs back that we've lost. We don't seem to know how to do anything at the government level in terms of cooperation and compromise. We have two wars that we're not quite sure how to end, and that's a lot for a nation to carry around. It feels, I drove around the country a lot in the last 2 years with my family on different trips. I saw a lot of images that seemed beyond recession. It really felt like a nation in some sort of decline that we don't quite yet understand, and it's painful to see that and painful to talk about it, but it is an economic recession, but there's also something bigger happening. The decline of the middle class, the decline of a certain kind of American dream that we thought was going to be at least possible, maybe not easy, but at least possible to achieve. I think that's going away.
It sounds like you're suggesting we need a new model of happiness. Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense of what that would look like?
Well, I have a sense that our model of happiness in this country is very much based on comfort. Everything from air conditioning to exactly what we want at the grocery store, no matter what season it is, we have these comforts that fuel American happiness. And if we're going to sort of reclaim a wholeness as a nation, I think we need to learn how to put up with a little discomfort, whether it's higher gas prices, whether it's not having fresh tomatoes in January in Wisconsin. These seem like small changes, but they really do add up to a certain expectation we have for how life should be. And until you drop those expectations of how life should be, it's really hard to make any changes.
We're all part of it. You're talking about accepting a life with limits.
I think that's a great way of putting it. I think that, you know, we're personally trying to make ourselves happier if we're in some sort of funk and we're trying to get out of it. We often add something to our routine. I need more exercise. Sometimes that's true, but sometimes it's just one more thing to feel bad about not doing. I need more supplements. I need to start doing this and reading this, and I need this iPad, and I need to be able to work from home. So I'm going to make a home office and have bookshelves built. And these aren't bad things, and these aren't things that are unique to any one sort of person, but we do tend to add things when we're feeling unhappy. And I think the vision we'll have to have individually and collectively is, what can we do without? What do we not need to sustain anymore? And then try to figure out, and then what do we really need? What do we really value? How are we going to teach our children? So, learning to live within limits. I think both Republicans and Democrats, conservatives and liberals, in different ways, but in a fundamentally similar way, wanted to have life with no limits, that there would be no limit to the funding for the things we wanted, no limit to the majesty of corporate America, no limit to the university system, whatever that was the institution that we valued, that we were a part of. We thought that should have no limits. And we all have to sort of start setting those limits for ourselves, I suppose.
Dean Bacopoulos teaches creative writing at Grinnell College and is the author of the new novel, My American Unhappiness. He spoke with Anne Strangechamps. Don't forget, you can download all of our interviews and listen to them later, or share them with friends. They're all on our website at ttbook.org.